Hello, friends. Welcome to yet another episode of Unboxing God with me, McCall. Today, we are going to unbox ego death, and you're going to hear that word and synonyms for that concept quite a bit today as we explore different experiences of pre-mortem death and rebirth, and a lot about psychedelics. William James's Variety of Religious Experiences, which you've heard me mention more than once in other episodes by now, was the first book that Bill Wilson, founder of AA, read as a newly invigorated sober man. And it deeply influenced his personal journey, as well as in many ways provided the mystical backbone of AA and all other 12-step programs, which referred to a spiritual awakening. I've always loved how Bill W. referred to spiritual awakenings as rocketing into the fourth dimension. By the way, if you're intrigued and want to hear more about the absolutely uncanny and outrageous overlaps between these two Bills, William J. and Bill W., you might want to subscribe to Unboxing God, because I have a bonus episode that I am going to be publishing soon. Anyway, the concepts of awakening, enlightenment, nirvana, the fourth dimension, etc., they all involve a sort of process to experience pre-mortem death, death before death, and rebirth. Now, the most obvious example is baptism, this idea of dying to oneself and being reborn a Christian, forgiven, restored, renewed, recovered. We explored meditation as a way to foster such a union with the divine in the last episode. We've talked about transformation being a hallmark of a mystical experience. The idea that one is essentially and intrinsically altered within, during, through, or by such a mystical event, somehow emerging changed. There are so many examples of this idea of pre-mortem death and rebirth rites and rituals throughout history, throughout cultures. How about the regular old run-of-the-mill Viking warrior that had to go through a ritual transformation via a mystical experience, a symbolic death and rebirth that would awaken their powers? This is true. They would attempt to shred every aspect of their humanity and literally become their totem animal. They'd live in the wild and battle as a beast. So this death rebirth ritual for Vikings turned a normal Viking warrior into an elite berserker. I'll share a link to the video about this in the show notes. Surely you've heard of a near-death experience that left the survivor inexorably altered, some sort of transformation of self or an understanding, a knowledge that is somehow newly gained from the experience. Pain can be an example of a gateway into this sort of altered state of transformation. I myself have sat for hours and hours at a time while a tattoo needle punctured my skin like pissed off hornets on meth. And as a person with Behçet's disease, basically, I have a hyperactive immune system and it causes these excessive and extremely painful ulcers, the kind that could make the Hulk cry out for his mommy. I can attest firsthand to an experience of pain which requires, forces one to detach their mind from their body, to somehow transcend the self. With practice, a lot of people have learned how to induce a meditative state, regardless of the barrage to their five senses and what's happening around them and what they're feeling. I think we all, but I know I, go through a great deal of trouble to live without fear. To experience ego death is to confront your worst fears in a brief period of time. With its ability to clear a safe space for getting over yourself, an acid trip substantially reduces the fear of death and probably reduces fear in general. That quote is from Vice correspondent Hamilton Morris, who goes on to say, which I imagine is the case for many frightening things. I imagine skydiving has a similar effect, or bungee jumping. Anything so conducive to extreme anxiety that you feel bolder for having survived it. And I'm not just bringing him up because Hamilton came on Disney Plus recently and I'm a little obsessed. I'm bringing him up because he's the psychedelics expert and resident pharmacopoeia correspondent for Vice. And he described ego death as this: a very complex and strange thing that involves at least loss of consciousness, like washing away into a black ocean of unconsciousness, and then coming back and not really knowing where you were or what happened. You could just as easily call it being reborn, but you don't need to call it anything. There's no word to describe it. Who knows what it is? It's a pharmacological fact, and no language will ever describe what it is accurately. It's a neurochemical change. Well, that sounds like an awful lot like that quality of ineffability that I talked about a couple weeks ago. One of the four components almost required to consider an experience to be mystical. Now, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, you probably haven't listened to that show, and you might want to go do that now so that this will make a little bit more sense. Because in last week's bonus episode, I talked about the doors of perception that Aldous Huxley wrote in 1954, where he interprets his own psychedelic experience with mescaline. Mr. Huxley wrote that the mystical experience is doubly valuable. It's valuable because it gives the experiencer a better understanding of himself and the world, and because it may help him to lead a less self-centered and more creative life. Now, that's the same British Aldous Huxley who wrote the dystopian Brave New World novel in 1932. As I mentioned last week, he was nominated for a Nobel Prize in Literature 7 times. I also mentioned that he moved to Los Angeles, where I live. And that is when he began deeply exploring and writing, speaking, teaching about Western / Eastern mystical overlap. He was living in Los Angeles and tripping balls on mescaline 20 years later after writing Brave New World at almost 60 years old. And he wrote The Doors of Perception in 1954, only 9 years before he died at age 69. Now get this. Aldous Huxley, whose novel you likely read in school at some point. No, not The Doors of Perception. I meant Brave New World. Anyway, that dude, on his deathbed, unable to speak because he had a type of throat cancer in his larynx, he wrote a handwritten request to his wife, Laura, and it said, LSD 100 intermuscular, end quote. According to her account of his death in a book called This Timeless Moment, she obliged, gave him an injection at 11:20 a.m. and a second dose just an hour later. Well, Huxley died at age 69 at 5:20 in Los Angeles on November 22nd, 1963. P.S. His death got ripped off in the media because one of my favorite Christian writers, probably one of my top 5 favorite writers of any kind, named C.S. Lewis, who was also a British author, died that same day. But guess what? He didn't get much love either in the news, because both of them were overshadowed by the assassination of American President John F. Kennedy the same day. An interesting little tidbit in case it ever comes up when you're playing Trivial Pursuit or something. Anyway, I want to circle back. We've heard ineffable come up several times as one of the hallmarks of a mystical experience. And I mentioned that ineffable at its core means that you can't explain it in words. It's something that there aren't words for. It's a experiential experience. And it also kind of implies that maybe you shouldn't. Another thing that keeps coming up is this idea of death and rebirth, transformation, transcendence, the breaking free and becoming a new person. Well, we've heard the term for that a couple of times now as ego death. One way to think of ego death is an irreversible end to one's philosophical identification with what Alan Watts calls the skin-encapsulated ego. The psychologist John Harrison defines temporary ego death as the loss of the separate self, or in the affirmative, a deep and profound merging with the transcendent other. Ego death and the related term ego loss have been defined in the context of mysticism by the religious studies scholar Daniel Meeker. He said, it's an imageless experience in which there is no sense of personal identity. It's the experience that remains possible in a state of extremely deep trance when the ego functions such as reality testing, sense perception, memory, reason, fantasy, and self-representation are repressed. Muslim Sufis call it fana, or annihilation, and medieval Jewish Kabbalists term it the kiss of death. I still like petite mort myself. Carter Phipps equates enlightenment with ego death, which he defines as the renunciation, rejection, and ultimately the death of the need to hold on to a separate, self-centered existence. Really, ego death is a fundamentally Freudian, psychoanalytic concept. In Jungian psychology, Carl Jung, it's defined as a fundamental transformation of the psyche. Such a shift in personality has been labeled ego death in Buddhism, or a psychic death by Carl Jung. In comparative mythology, ego death is the second phase of Joseph Campbell's description of the hero's journey, which, by the way, if you haven't already heard it, you might want to listen to my 12-year-old son, Marley, explain that hero's journey to my husband, Kyle. It's in bonus episode 3. Anyways, the hero's journey has phases of separation, transition, incorporation, but the second phase is a phase of self-surrender and ego death, whereafter the hero returns to enrich the regular world with his new self, his new discoveries, the treasure he got from defeating the dragon in the cave. Again, it's that pre-mortem, before death, death, the little mort, the little death. But it's also the rebirth. It's the coming back into your life with some new knowledge, some awareness, some awakening, transcendent awakening, with which then to live your life. So 2 weeks ago, when I introduced the idea of mysticism and experiencing the divine, at the beginning of episode 6, I said this. So with that in mind, what brought me to a Stoic search was looking for how to live a good life without God. So to throw a little yin on that yang, now I want to explore full penetration with God. Take that as you will. It might have seemed crude, but I want to explain why I used those words. There is an article I read by an author named Natasha Young. I actually made an attempt to get a hold of Ms. Young, asking her to detail what she called her petite mort experience. Now, in French, that means little death, and it's also another term for an orgasm. Natasha Young wrote, from sexual climax follows a transcendent lightness in which thinking about yourself precludes existence. Now, I find that exceptionally interesting and entirely relatable. So that is why I used those words. Now, Ms. Young did not get back to me, may have never gotten my messages. So I have decided I'm just going to have story time with McCall for a minute and read you her essay, which is titled The Ego's Death Trip. Here it goes. I believe my ego dissolved last winter. I first dropped acid with my friends in California's Joshua Tree National Park on the night of a full lunar eclipse. I dropped again 6 months later, a double dose. My first trip was what I think was your typical psychedelic experience. Pleasant, exciting, gut-wrenching, yet consciousness expanding. During my second trip, however, I went to a profoundly dark place. So apart from my body did I feel that I could hardly control my hands. Really, I could do nothing except sit on the floor, benumbed and crying over my regrets. Fortunately, my friends stepped in and brought me back to myself. We went for a steep uphill walk to catch a moonlight view of our corner of Los Angeles. It was then that I gained a profoundly clear, yet not at all fear-inducing, perception of my own mortality. I felt more concerned for the welfare and longevity of everybody else I knew. Life itself seemed endearing. Later waves of my trip seemed to elevate me from the fear and doubt with which I'd been struggling to a new stage of self-revelation. By morning, I was of the mind that a new me had emerged from the shell of the old. The level of disassociation, an ineffable disembodied clarity gripping me, buoyed my consciousness as if it were a floating, feeling eyeball. My mind state was so unlike the mad, whirling self-fascination of other psychoactive experiences I had had. I understood why some compare ego death to a near-death experience, but I looked at it as more of a, quote, hard reset. My brain rebooted like a computer, all viruses and virtual clutter wiped clean. The same old hardware, ready to run like new. Ego death is like being let in on a joke after a lifetime of obliviousness. At first, you feel relief. Then you realize that it's a joke nobody's the butt of. So there's nothing to be relieved about. Everything just is. You realize how little control over life you or anybody else has. And all your overblown notions of self-actualization seem laughable. Acid is caustic to any egocentrism. It dissolves every layer of your identity until you have nothing left to be but the monad of conscious awareness that is the self. Regrettable patterns of behavior that had plagued me for years resolved into view with astounding, terrifying clarity. What I had internalized as faults, to be hated, were revealed simply to be games which I could choose to play or not. I realized I could turn away from a mirror whenever bad thoughts arrive. I gained a healthy aversion to my smartphone. The inescapable immersion of the psychedelic experience also removed my urge to record it in writing. Every moment I spent wondering how to capture it was time lost inhabiting it. The trip was the thing, not any souvenirs I might take back with me. The trip had changed me. Admittedly, I'm not entirely free of old habits. Ingrained mental patterns are stubborn. The change lies rather in the fact that I'm more self-aware and therefore better able to check myself when those old habits kick in. Ego death is as much a learning experience as it is a psychedelic one. And I came away from it with new, unforeseen ways of coping. So drugs can be another usher into a transcendent state.
Hi, I'm McCall's husband, Kyle. At the end of last week's bonus episode, McCall teased that we would discuss the use of psychedelics to induce mystical experiences. As someone with my own experience with psychedelics, after all, one of my favorite bands is Pink Floyd, she asked if I would tackle this portion of the podcast. Immediately, I recalled an episode of a favorite podcast of mine, the Waking Up Podcast with Sam Harris. Harris is a noted philosopher and neuroscientist, as well as a famous proponent of meditation. But he may be best known as one of the four horsemen of modern atheism, along with Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, and the late Christopher Hitchens. Sam was one of the many voices that resonated with me as I worked through a period in my life where I ultimately moved away from my Christian faith, and in fact, I now consider myself an atheist. So how do I contribute to a podcast called Unboxing God? Well, as I mentioned, I listened to a conversation Sam had with Michael Pollan, author and New York Times Magazine contributor, on the May 28, 2018 episode of his podcast titled Freedom from the Known. Their whole conversation revolves around psychedelics and their use in therapeutic ways, but also as they relate to mystical experiences. Now, before I go any further, I want to provide some clarification and maybe debunk some powerful myths around psychedelic drugs and their usage. The category of drugs I'm talking about includes LSD, psilocybin, which is the chemical compound found in magic mushrooms or shrooms, DMT, mescaline, and MDMA, aka ecstasy, X, or Molly. While all of these drugs seem to indicate some level of therapeutic use in treating a variety of mental health issues, the three that seem the most encouraging are LSD, psilocybin, and DMT. And it is these three that I will be referring to moving forward. It should also be noted that while researchers have found these drugs to have no lethal doses, and none are habit-forming, all should be avoided by anyone at risk of schizophrenia or who may have a tenuous grasp on their mental health. I would also note that using these drugs in controlled settings will alleviate any panic reactions that may accompany their use. Current research shows positive trends for treatment of anxiety and depression, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and even addiction. These chemical compounds seem to impact disorders characterized by obsessive or rigid thinking. But how do these drugs create mystical experiences? During his exchange with Michael Pollan, Sam Harris notes the difference between meditation and psychedelics. Meditation, Harris says, has the goal of changing your relationship to your thoughts without changing their content. In other words, there is no attempt to alter your thoughts in meditation. Practitioners of mindfulness are instructed to pay attention to or observe their thoughts and let them pass without judgment, to simply notice thoughts, sights, or sounds as they arise in consciousness. With psychedelics, however, the contents of consciousness change radically. Sights, sounds, and thoughts are impacted. In a very real sense, your consciousness is transported to a different plane of existence. You cannot help but change your patterns of thinking while tripping. William James spoke of the noetic quality of mystical experiences, the concept that the insights one gains during a mystical experience have a quality of revealed truth, that is, that they are not of yourself. Further, he described the feeling of universality or a bond with something greater than oneself. In fact, these are some of the ideas at the very root of the mystical experience. The change of consciousness, the ego dissolution or loss of self that are inherent to the mystical experience reliably occur under the influence of psychedelics also. As Robert Plant put it in Led Zeppelin's opus Stairway to Heaven, no doubt influenced by some form of psychedelic, "The tune will come to you at last when one is all and all is one." In other words, you will know the revealed truth when you experience the loss of self. Saul of Tarsus had a mystical experience en route to Damascus and emerged the Apostle Paul. But for those of us for whom otherwise no light will flash and to whom no divine voice will speak, there is LSD or psilocybin, presented here for your consideration.
There are two books that any research into, especially psychedelic-induced mystical experiences, are almost requisite reading. The main one is called The Psychedelic Experience, and it's a manual for tripping based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Which brings me to the other book, The Tibetan Book of the Dead. Now, I know that sounds like maybe it's some kind of manual for a mortician, but it actually has very little to do with death and more to do with how to live. If read a certain way, the Tibetan Book of the Dead is actually an incredible guide in how to live a happy and content life. And based on it, three people, originally at Harvard University, authored a book called The Psychedelic Experience. Timothy Leary, Ralph Metzner, and Richard Alpert, also known as Ram Dass. It is truly an instruction manual that is intended for use during sessions involving psychedelic drugs, and it was published in 1964. The book includes a short introductory citation from Huxley's book, The Doors of Perception. And if you are at all intrigued by psychedelics and mystical experiences, I highly recommend it. The description of ego loss in The Psychedelic Experience is presented with clinical precision. I mean, the authors were still very close to their academic ties at Harvard, and the language is in the objective academic style of three psychologists. They list the symptoms of the onset of what they call ego loss in a psychedelic experience with eight symptoms. Bodily pressure, which the Tibetans call earth sinking into water. Number two, clammy coldness, followed by feverish heat, which the Tibetans call water sinking into fire. Number three, body disintegrating or blown to atoms, which the Tibetans called fire sinking into air. Then number four is pressure on head and ears, which Americans call rocket launching into space. Number five is tingling in extremities. Six, feeling of body melting or flowing as if wax. Seven, nausea. Eight, trembling or shaking, beginning in the pelvic regions and spreading up the torso. The book tells the reader that these physical reactions should be recognized as signs heralding transcendence, and it warns us to avoid treating them as symptoms of illness, and instead to accept them, merge with them, and enjoy them. Now, I don't think we need to apply that advice only to physical experiences after taking a drug or chemical. I would like to apply it to my everyday experiences of, quote, symptoms. When I start feeling anxious or nervous or in a rush or overthinking something, it is the perfect time to avoid treating those as symptoms of my illness, to accept them, merge with them, and even enjoy them. One of the tools of recovery that did not come from a 12-step program at all, but from my own insane brain, or maybe I'll chalk it up to Waldo, is the idea of taking a toke of God. Well, I say Waldo, but taking a hit of Waldo. Just the process of stopping when I want to freak out and inhaling with intention, which is kind of what I'd do if I was pissed anyway. Holding it in and thinking of it as the divine, and then slowly exhaling. That process gives me the pause to allow the moment to become somewhat of a mystical experience, to become a moment where I'm hanging out with something I can't describe, just inviting that ineffable goodness and shift and change of heart into a moment that would otherwise make me explode. For me, that's a divine moment. It's also pretty amazing and beyond myself.
Good
This is one of those episodes so packed with external links and resources that if you're interested, one of our previous guests, a personal friend of mine, and a listener, Ms. Cassidy, has created show notes for us with quotes from each episode, as well as a summary and external links to outside and additional resources. Head over to unboxinggodpodcast.com/blog and you'll see all the episodes we've published so far. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode and so that I know I'm not talking to thin air. Thank you so much for listening, and I can't wait to give you a bonus episode next week. Bye.